going to be out of town, and I think Ben had a bunch of backup plans, and I think everybody else was busy as well, so we may all be teaching each other a little bit this morning. It's not that this is new material, and so I know all of us have looked through this, but I think there'll be some good discussion from it, so bear with me as I told him I would go ahead and utilize his notes, and then I kind of got to look through this the first time last night about 10 o'clock, so we'll go through this together, but 1 Timothy chapter 5 is where we're at. If you'll all turn there, we're going to read some verses on really instructions to evangelists, and we're going to look at kind of the next section here, which is kind of interesting, something for all of us to consider. 1 Timothy chapter 5, and we're going to read verses 17 through 25, and I believe we probably got into, and I don't remember exactly, but I think he got into the first couple of verses, but we'll start really looking at 19, but will someone read 17 through 20, and then somebody else read 21 through the end of the chapter?
Let the elders who rule well be counted worthy of double honor, especially those who labor in the word and doctrine. For the scripture says, "You shall not muzzle an ox while it treads out the grain, and the laborer is worthy of his wages." Do not receive an accusation against an elder except from two or three witnesses. Those who are sinning, rebuke in the presence of all, that the rest also may fear.
Okay, and then somebody 21 through the end of the chapter. Okay, thanks. Okay, I think we, and somebody keep me honest, but I think we talked briefly about verses 17 through 17 and 18. Does anyone want to just recall some of the things that was talked about last week about those two things? This worthy of double honor. Does anybody remember the comments that were made about that double honor? Where else do we see that double honor?
Well, he's saying we talked last week about all week about the support of widows and the difference between a widow indeed and a woman who was a widow but not a Christian widow or not worthy of support from the church, but those widows that are
true,
worthy or and meet the qualifications are worthy of support from the church. And then we said that likewise those elders that do their job right and rule well, if they are in need of financial support, then they're worthy of that also.
Yeah, good.
And so it's kind of, I think it's about all the
same. Yeah, that's a good recap. That's exactly what was said. And in that last verse there in 18, that kind of the end of that, says the laborer is worthy of his wages. So to your point, if an elder was in need of money, could they be paid? Could they receive wages? And I see a lot of head nods, and the answer is, yeah, they could. And so anybody else have any other comments about those two verses? I mean, like I said, we talked about that a little bit, and Mike recapped it really well. Okay, go ahead.
This is something that we've always studied. I've never known of any situation. There may have been some.
Yeah, I think it would be unique, but I think the point is that if there was a need there, I think the comment is that they could receive.
Yeah,
but
I think what Mike said was right. You know, it's talking about somebody who's really in need.
Really in need.
And really working hard.
Yeah.
That they're in need.
Well, and I think that comparison that was made, and we, like I say, we spent a whole day on that, but the comparison between a widow and a widow indeed is kind of the point that leads right into this. So it's not someone that, you know, might meet some of the qualifications, but someone truly who is in need and then meets all those qualifications. Well, if you're an elder and you've met the qualifications and you're an elder and you're truly in need, would the church not help that elder out? You know, I think the same applies. So,
I think we also could be talking about the, hesitate to use the word burden, but I mean, with some elderships, they spend a lot of time in the local church. And so, you know, it could be hard if they're still employed.
Right, to try to do both jobs. Yeah. Yep. I think all good points. Okay, so that really brings us to catch us up to where I think Ben left off, which is 19 through 25. And verse 19 says, "Do not receive an accusation against an elder except from two or three witnesses." You know, the point here being is that I think it's important if we're going to rebuke an elder or there is some correction that's needing to be made. The point here being is that should be done, or that accusation should be done with two or three witnesses. Let's talk about for a minute, why would that be? Why would it probably not be appropriate for just one person to come? Could one person come? Sure, but why do you think it's better if two or three come?
Now, this is actually talking to the evangelist.
Correct. Okay.
So that gives us the principle that when elders are out of line, I would say first, though, that members should go to, one member could have a problem. They need to go to the elder or elders, you know, with that problem. But then if it's not resolved at that step, I think that probably they need to go to an evangelist, but not by themselves.
Yeah. Well, see, you kind of leapfrog into the next thing, which is the...
Idea.
Well, that's okay. The evangelist piece is the important piece. But, and I think that's why I said, is it wrong for someone to go to the elder as an individual? Absolutely not. Matter of fact, I think any elder that's doing their job as a leader would tell you that they would want you as an individual to come to them. Why then do you think it's important, though, that two or three would go to evangelists to bring this point? Yeah, Eddie and then Mike. Okay. Okay, I think that's good. What else, Mike, were you...
Well, I was just going to say, I think there's one of the Proverbs says something about when someone goes before the judge and pleads their case, I can't say it verbatim,
right.
But they go and plead their case, it all sounds good till your neighbor comes and gives his side of the story. So,
yeah.
You know, two or three people can give a more complete account of something, but I think the important thing here, especially verse 19, is the word accusation. You know, we should all be able to talk with one another. And
yeah.
if we don't agree with something going on, there's no problem with us doing that. But this, I think this is talking about
something
that they believe that the elder has done wrong.
Wrong.
Sin, or maybe it's a... You know, maybe it's a doctrinal issue that they believe is wrong, because the following verse,
yeah,
says,
those who are sinning.
Sinning,
yeah,
then it gives a remedy for that.
Yeah.
So it's not just I don't think it's just a difference of opinion about something.
I agree.
I mean, it could include that, but
yeah.
It's much more than that, I think is what he's talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think two things are important. One is to note that these are instructions for the evangelist. And I think, and we're going to get into this a little bit, and so I'm trying to stay with the notes. But, you know, why is it important for an evangelist to then come and speak to elders? So who has the authority in the local congregation? The elders. Well, if everybody's in subjection to them, and then you're going to bring something against the elders, that usually doesn't work. That's like trying to discipline your own boss. Have you ever tried that at work? It doesn't really work. So I think that's why it's really important that you have, and I'm going to use my own verbiage, but you have an outside party. And would you go to an evangelist that then rolls up into the elders of that local congregation? I don't think the answer to that is that you would. Because, again, they're in subjection or they're under the authority of those elders. So who would you get with? Someone that's not tied to that local congregation. And we're going to get into some, I think, some examples of that.
You know, trust them to be impartial.
Sure.
In the situation, and then they're answerable to their elders.
That's right.
You know, this line of authority just kind of, the Lord's really set it up in a good way.
Yeah. So whose duty is it to establish elders?
Well, it comes from first in the church.
That's right.
The evangelist is the one that
signifies appoints them.
And appoints them, like you said.
Yeah. So that's why I think we have that. So, I mean, we can go look at that, but I think we have this point being that the rebuking of elders would come from that. The establishing them as elders also comes from evangelists. So, sure.
Well, I made it all clear.
Yeah.
But with two or three witnesses,
that helps.
It definitely would have to be clear. And there wouldn't be any question about it.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think there's also, you know, it's easy at times to maybe have a personal thing. And so if it's a one-on-one, maybe there's an axe to grinders or whatever. I mean, something like that. But when you've got multiple people and there's multiple thoughts that this is wrong, then it's different. When you have two or three or you've got multiple people, then it's different. Will someone go to 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 2? This is instruction to Timothy, of course, as an evangelist. What is the instruction there? 2 Timothy 4 and 2.
Preach the word, be ready in season and out of season. Convince, rebuke, exhort with all long-suffering and teaching.
Okay. So I think here we've established, you know, that as what the evangelist should be doing. Of course, we know that all of those things are things we basically all can be doing. Can we all preach the word? Should we all be ready in and out of season? Absolutely. But they are to convince, rebuke, exhort with all long-suffering and teaching. And why would that be? Well, I think that's that checks and balance that I was speaking of earlier. You know, if an evangelist is not in line, and I think back to Mike's point, if it's something, you know, more than just maybe a little disagreement, but sinning, truly sinning, then it gives the evangelist an opportunity who's not a member of the congregation, and that's, in my opinion, I think outside that congregation, then the opportunity to come to them and make right or talk about that.
I was just going to mention, this has happened. In my lifetime, I remember I really wasn't a part of the congregation where it happened, but I was close to it. And so what happens then when the evangelist is contacted by two or three members saying, we think we have a serious, like Mike said, a sin.
Mm-hmm.
Then the evangelist then comes into the congregation and acts as an arbitrator, and then you actually, then the congregation gets involved. And you have these two or three witnesses that will state their case, and it's kind of a trial.
Yeah.
Well, do we see an example of that in Scripture, though, where the congregation gets involved? I mean, how?
I don't know, Mike. I just don't know that's how it's been carried out. On a situation, I remember one where actually two evangelists were called, and they actually had, basically, they called them.
Well, you know, we really don't have, you know, one thing you said, Clayton, I kind of agree with, but on the other hand, I don't know, you know, talking about calling in an evangelist who is not supported by the congregation, but yet Paul's telling Timothy here, Timothy established all of his elders.
He established them, yeah. But he's not per se a member there, but I know what you mean.
Well, no, but we've got, you know, we support Tad, but we also support three other evangelists who are not members here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying there may not be a right or wrong here. I'm not saying that. I just, we don't have a lot of...
We don't.
As far as I know, the Scripture doesn't say.
We don't.
And it doesn't really give direction to the evangelist on how to proceed. You know, whether to, you know, when the evangelist appoints elders, you know, they do that in different ways.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, I don't think there's a set way. And the reason I feel the way I do is I think that when you can bring someone in that's not maybe biased, I think it helps. And I think that's why we have judges in life. I think that's why businesses have HR in the secular world. Because sometimes you need someone that is maybe not right involved in it, you know, and maybe they can be as unbiased and, you know, help in that matter. Because we can't lose sight of this. What is the main objective? So if someone has got to come to an elder, what's the main objective of that? No different than the main objective if I've got to go to Kevin, or Kevin's got to come to me, or I've got to go to Jan. It's to help that brother or sister out. It's to hopefully point out a wrongdoing and set them in order. It's not to, well, we can list the 15 reasons it's not.
And so to that point, I was looking at what Jesus said in Matthew 18. If your brother sins,
15
you can go show him his fault just between the two of you. If he listens to you, you won your brother over. But if he will not listen, take one or two others along so that every matter may be established by the testimony of your witnesses. If he refuses to listen, then tell it to the church.
You are two bullets ahead of me. That's good. It's exact. So we see that, and that's the thing. We see that. I think the other thing is there's other. Will somebody turn to Deuteronomy 17:16? Because Karen, we're going to come back to that. But I think that's exactly. I mean, that's a good example.
While we're turning there, I might just say I think one of the main responsibilities of any evangelist in that situation would be to continue to keep a unified church and not do all they could to not allow division to occur, which could be.
Sure. Well, you got to think, and we're going to get to this in a minute, but why would it be so important to correct an elder quickly? Because obviously we know that that can...
Yeah, and also it would be before the congregation.
Sure.
Definitely, you know. So that would be a congregational thing.
Yeah. Okay. So let's get back to rebuking an elder. Accusations must be received by multiple people. I mean, we read that, so that's one thing. And then Ben's got a couple samples here on following biblical teaching. So Deuteronomy chapter 17, verse 6. What does it say?
On the evidence of two witnesses or three witnesses, he who is to die shall be put to death. He shall not be put to death on the evidence of three witnesses.
Okay. So here we have this kind of this reoccurring theme of two to three witnesses. And we've now read it in three different locations. Karen just read of it in Matthew chapter 18. Jan read of it in Old Testament time. But there's this two or three witnesses. Now, does that mean that those two or three people are right? No. But it's better than one. I think that a lot of times you may have a person that has maybe an individual concern. But you start getting two to three people, and I don't think that's a magic number. It may be five. It may be multiples. But the point is, when you start having multiple people that feel like an elder is in the wrong, then you've got a problem. You've got something worthy of probably taking that to the evangelist to say, hey, this is what we see. Taking it to the elders, obviously. I mean, I've always said this. I'm a school board president, and my very first thing when a community member gets with me is, have you spoken to that teacher? Did you speak to the coach? Have you taken your concern to them? And 90 times out of 100, they go, nope. Then go do that. Why would you have an issue? And it should be no different with brothers or sisters. If I've got an issue with Luanna, I should go talk to Luanna about that. If Luanna's got a problem with me, come talk. Tell me about it. So we can talk that out. And then, if she doesn't seem to get anywhere with that conversation, what's she supposed to do? Bring in a couple more, if that's, you know, substantiated. So I think we're seeing this as a theme. So I'll just pause there for a second. Anybody have any comments about that there in Matthew 18? And I know that's a brother sinning against you, but if they won't hear you, then what do? Go get two or three more and talk that out. And I think to Larry's point, it is, you know, sometimes we think in our minds, we've articulated perfectly. Isn't that funny how that happens? And for whatever reason, Larry totally missed my point, or I missed his point, and next thing you know, we've got a disagreement about something silly, and we haven't really had a chance to kind of hear that out. And maybe somebody that, again, is unbiased, that sees it from an outside perspective, says, well, Larry, that didn't come across quite like, you know, or whatever. Okay, so why is it that we do that? It avoids a member-to-member, I think, axe to grind, if you will. And I'm using that verbiage. I don't know if that's really good, but... you know, someone just maybe trying to create problems. But rebuke must be public. That was a comment that was made there. This appears to be different from the rebuking of others. So, and maybe except for false teachers. We're told when it's about false teachers, then it is the same. It would be public.
Back to Matthew 18 there.
Uh-huh.
That starts out as a private matter.
It does, yep.
And Christ wants it resolved the way if possible. But mm-hmm. if not possible, then it becomes public.
That's right.
And the sin also becomes public before the church.
That's right.
So, you know, whether a Christian or an elder, either one.
It's going to become public.
It can become public. And you know what? It does.
Yeah.
Because people that sin and live in sin, that think that people don't know,
right?
Who are they deceiving?
Only themselves. Yeah.
Also, with this, it's not as if just because two or three have made it an
accusation, that's right,
that we jump to the point where there's any rebuke going on either. I mean, there's examination of some things.
Yeah.
If they're the only two or three people in the congregation who see an issue with it, they're. At least be hesitant to get too far.
Sure. So. Sure. I think, Mike, you said it. We don't have any hard, fast rules. I mean, I don't know that there's anything more than what we're reading here. We can look at some examples. We can see some things where I think we can make correlation to that are good, sound principles, but it doesn't specifically spell it out. Okay, so the rebuke must be made public ultimately, if that can't be resolved. Why is that? So let's go back to verse 20. It says, those who are sinning rebuke in the presence of all, that the rest also may fear. What does that mean? That the rest may also fear.
What's a deterrent against that sin?
Okay.
Well, as a classroom teacher, if kids are misbehaving, you can let them go on.
Yeah.
Then nothing's going on.
Yeah.
If you rebuke, I mean, you know, there's a time and place to rebuke fairly harshly. Most of the time that isn't the case, but if you have to, then you get a classroom of students that kind of sit up and
take notice. Yeah. It is, and I think the other thing is that it goes back to a point I made earlier. Elders have great influence, right? So think about this. If you've got an elder who is sinful or is sinning, and they're influential, that sin could be influencing the congregation. And I think, you know, in 1 Corinthians 5, 6, and 7 says, your glorifying is not good. Do you not know that a little leaven leavens the whole lump? Well, what could happen by one elder? One elder's misdeeds, misfortune, sinning, what could that do for the congregation? So therefore, purge out the old leaven that you may be a new lump, since you are truly unleavened, for indeed Christ our Passover was sacrificed for us. So, you know, that fear, like you said, I think can be both ways. But at the end of the day, the congregation would need to be aware of what's going on. Verse 21 says, rebuke without prejudice or partiality. I think this part is really, really important. So there at the very end, it says, observe these things without prejudice, doing nothing with partiality. You know, I think Paul is warning Timothy that showing any kind of favoritism, or, you know, when you're doing some correcting of the elders is going to be a problem. So, you know, I think it's important. It could be easy to, and we do this. This happens in real life, real world all the time, that because of someone's maybe status, maybe it's a cop, maybe it's the vice president of your company or whatever, we show partiality, or you let things slide, or you maybe don't address it the way it should be. And I think, so this goes twofold. One is that if you observe that, whatever it is, you've got to hit it straight on. But I think the other thing is not, maybe not showing partiality towards the person as well. So I think it's twofold, but... why can that be a problem? Why is it that showing any kind of partiality be an issue? Goes back to
the first time you do, you lose respect of all other people that see it.
Yeah. I mean, people see right through it.
If you're going to be a leader,
yeah,
and do it right, then you can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's an evangelist or an elder, or in your job as a supervisor at
work. Once it's done, it's damage is done. Okay, this next verse that says, "Do not lay hands on anyone hastily." We'll just pause there. What does this laying on of hands mean here?
Don't make too quick a judgment.
Okay. Yeah, so this laying on of hands may not be so what the laying on of hands is other places. But what do we know about laying on of hands when installing elders?
That's to confer something.
Okay.
Benefit.
Yep. We've talked about that. So
acceptance of.
Okay. So in this specific instance here, and we're talking about laying on hands of this situation, we don't want to make a rash decision. We don't want to race into that. And in Hebrews, will somebody go to Hebrews 6, 1 through 2? Let's look at a basic principle here. Hebrews 6, 1 through 2. Okay. So what would be the purpose of Timothy laying on hands? And was it giving spiritual gifts, per se?
Well, it was to take a hold of the situation.
Okay, yes.
Take charge of it, you know. And
Timothy was laying the past on spiritual
That's gifts. Right, exactly. So that's why we know it wasn't that. And was it appointing evangelists? No. This duty was... is given to elders, so it must mean that it's why it's being discussed. So
it goes along with multiple witnesses, you know, thoroughly investigate the accusation, and you know if it's false, then reprimand those that brought it, and if it's not false, then reprimand those that are involved.
That's right. Yeah.
There could be two verdicts, if you want to call it that.
Sure.
And it could be removal from the office of eldership, or it could be disfellowship from the congregation.
Yeah, depending on the sin, depending on what's going on.
Well, I haven't studied this particular passage in depth and kind of the context of it. I've always perceived it to be back before they became elders, you know, make sure a person's truly qualified, make sure they're of the right temperament, and you're going to avoid those situations that could arise.
So to me,
it's not necessarily addressing the end of it, it's addressing at the very beginning, make sure you are...
You've done your homework. You know, yeah, I totally agree.
So
I think that's what it is.
That's how I perceive it.
Yeah. And then, so this instruction, let's go to, and I've got it, Titus chapter 1, verse 5 says, so this would be instructions to Titus, "For this reason I left you in Crete, that you should set in order the things that are lacking, and appoint elders in every city as I commanded you." And so, you know, Paul is warning Timothy about not being too hasty in appointing elders. It's just exactly what you're talking about there. And a bad leader can have... Anybody who has hired people, we've all made poor hires, and we've also, some of us have put poor leaders in leadership roles. And when doing that, it has a really severe negative impact on the group. And so we've seen that all the way from judges to kings to presidents to, you can go right down the list. I mean, when someone's appointed that's not good and homework wasn't done. We got an issue. Drinking. So let's just get to this quickly. We've got about... Go ahead.
Let's not miss the second option on that. Don't lay hold on them quickly. Don't do it too quickly. But then the next verse is, but don't take part in their sins either. Don't let it drag out.
Yeah.
And on and on.
Yep.
So in other words, he said, you know, keep yourself pure in this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
From both sides.
Yeah. That's a good point. Yep. Yeah, it's easy to get sucked in and be in the mire and the muck. Yep. Okay, this verse 23. No longer drink only water, but use a little wine for your stomach's sake and your frequent infirmities. So is this giving, you know, some could read this and say, yep, this means we need to be drinking. What do you think? Is that what this is saying?
No. For medicinal purpose.
Okay, yeah.
I don't think it applies to today at all.
Yeah.
I don't think this verse has absolutely any relevance.
Because what was going on, I think you're probably right, for the most part.
No, almost no medicine of any value at all.
Yeah. So you didn't have medicine back then. What was probably true about their water? And their,
it
was bad. Wasn't good. And so as you, we tell people drink a lot more water and it's good for you. Well, if they're drinking water and it's not pure, what typically happens? You're going to get bacteria. You're going to get sick. You got issues. So, hey, don't drink so much water. Drink a little wine for your stomach's sake. So this is not encouraging people to drink alcohol. I think you're right today.
At that point in time, a little alcohol in the water may have very well killed some right. of the bugs in the water.
Yeah, I was going to say, most say that from a medicinal standpoint, there was probably a purifying that helped take place there. So I think it's really important that was their medicine of the day. And it was just, you know, being offered there. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's still the advice today is don't, if it's drink bottled water for sure. Yeah. Yep, precisely.
Before you move on,
sure.
This verse is a parenthetical phrase. I mean, it's put in parentheses. It's kind of added here. I've thought about that a lot. Why is it added up here? Right after telling the evangelist, Tim, okay, you're going to have to do this. In other words, is all this given to his stomach, so to speak, his nerves?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know why it's inserted at this point.
I don't have it. Could be.
Do we know that in the original letter it was in this order, or when the Bible was canonized, maybe the scripture was inserted?
Yeah.
That could be.
It may not have any relevance at all to.
To what was?
But I just wonder why it wound up in this place.
Mm-hmm.
If it had anything to do with the fall, with the above, or or does it have something to do with the fall? I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, in our last 5 minutes, then verse 24 and 25, it says, some men's sins are clearly evident, preceding them to judgment, but those of some men follow later. Likewise, the good works of some are clearly evident, and those that are otherwise cannot be hidden. I think it's interesting. Some things can be hidden for quite some time. That's obvious. And some are pretty good at it. But to Mike's point, at some point in time, it's going to become public, probably. But I think it is interesting. Some people's sins are obvious. You know, when we commit sin, there's things that can be committed privately. And like I say, it might be concealed for a while, but there's other things that we do that are public and they're out there. And whether it's we say or do something in front of someone that sees us, or we do that to a brother or sister, and so, of course, it's evident. But it's just a reminder here. It doesn't matter. You know, sin is sin, and it can be, we think, private. But especially, and of course, we have to think about what's going on here. We're talking about elders. Well, there's things elders could do that's in front of the congregation that obviously are going to be evident to the congregation. There's going to be some that maybe they think are private, and they may trail along for years thinking those things are private, but at some point in time, it's probably going to become evident. So
it may also be, you know, in the case of an evangelist or an elder, or maybe even someone who has, you know, a lot of influence in the church, that maybe there's some decisions that they made that right away you don't see any problem with.
Yeah.
But it takes a few years, or maybe several years, for them these things to grow, and then it's evident that it was wrong.
Yep.
You know, some things just have to grow.
Sure.
To become evident as to what they really are.
Yeah. And then that 25 kind of follows it up. It's no different on good works. And of course, we know what should happen with our good works. Those aren't to be seen and done in front of men for their praise, but most of those hopefully are going to be done in secret and quiet. And I have no doubt this is the case for our elders, that we probably don't know half the good that's done by elders. Same thing from you as members. I don't know half the good things you do, and you probably don't know half the good things I do. Shouldn't. We don't need to let our right hand know what our left hand's doing. But, you know, I think this is just a good reminder. And I think it's the dichotomy of the two verses. You're going to have things that are bad, that are public, and maybe private. And it's just, it's a reminder here that what not only our leaders should be doing, but what we should be doing. Any other comments? I know I probably went through that quicker than maybe we should have. Of course, we're done right on time. And Ben probably had plenty more points he had brought out. But this is from what I've studied and read in my short time. Yeah, Kevin.
Okay. Didn't really Paul tell us today is Facebook.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, in terms of just this idea, when we do good works, it's nice. You know, some people are putting things out on Facebook, which is nice to know. And you know, but
do it. Does is it necessary?
Facebook, I've got to think. Well, you know, are we doing this for praise or? Well. I mean, just kind of something to think about. I mean, it's good to post it. It's good to know of the good things people are doing.
And thank goodness, probably not so much in the church, but how many people air out their, you know, issues and dirty laundry and faith. So, I mean, to your point, all those things. Yeah. Yeah.
Jesus said, I don't remember if it was in Matthew or not, but he said that when you do your good works in a corner or you do your good works in private, then God will reward
that's
you
right.
later.
Yeah. Yep, we do not, you know. Think about, like I say, when we talk about not letting your left hand know what your right hand, I mean, that's impossible.
Sometimes you may do it in private.
Yeah.
And then other people are posting.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it goes back to, why is it that we're not supposed to grow weary in well-doing? It's back to that point, exactly right there. I see Kevin's talking about all the great things he's doing. I've done the exact same things. And I'm like, look at all the praise he gets out of that. I think I'll just stop. You know, I mean, that there's part of that too, that we shouldn't. We just keep doing the right things because it's the right thing to do, and not worry about what's going on or what others might be receiving praise for. So, and you know, at work, as Christians, that's easy for that to happen. Maybe we're not as good, or we don't tout some of the great things that you're doing, or talk about. But should we change? We really shouldn't. We keep doing what we know is right, and if that is made public, great. If it's not, but I know that all of us sitting here today have watched people leapfrog either in a promotion or get a pay raise or something else that has happened for them that you might have been deserving of, but because we're Christians, it's different. So, okay, I'll leave it with you. We'll take a short break. Thanks for your comments.
I'll just say, for next week, I'll be taking over next week.
Okay.
For a quarter, and it's going to be on the